Chapter number 3, about a couple weeks ago, not the last couple Sunday nights, but the Sunday night before that, we began talking about different things we want to teach the generation to come. If you remember, about a month ago, we talked about the different ways that we need to teach and how we need to train by example and how we need to live a life and be able to train others and teach others by our own lives. And tonight, we're going to look at another thing that we're going to teach, that we need to teach the generation to come about. Another thing we need to teach a generation to come about, and 3 weeks ago we did a couple different things, but tonight we're going to just focus on one thing and some different applications about this one thing, and I think it's a good thing. I think most of us would agree that the generation to come needs to know about this, but there's a couple things I want to remind you about. First of all, we talked about training versus teaching about 4 weeks ago. And how we need to take the time and we need to take the opportunity to work with young people and work with the generation to come. Now, this is not just, obviously, where are they supposed to learn it at? They are supposed to learn it at home. And their parents are supposed to be teaching their children. And the church is supposed to be reinforcing it. But if their parents are not teaching it, the church might teach different things that they've never heard before. And they're going to need patience. They're going to need somebody to sit with them, someone to care for them. Maybe when someone comes in church, never been in church before, they're not going to know how to sit. They're not going to know how to act. They need someone to lovingly come aside them and sit with them and be patient with them and kind with them, not just somebody overbearing, yelling at them, hitting them and things like that. Obviously, no. But we need somebody who's going to come along and help them. And we are thankful when we first came to church or how our parents taught us how to act. And believe me, there are so many different things in this generation faces that we never experienced as children. I never experienced as a child, and I'm getting ready to turn 40 in a few months. So I know that many of you didn't face that. They're in their 60s and 70s, 80s, and even 90s. And there's things that our young people really need to be taught, really need to be shown. They're not learning it anywhere else. If they're not going to learn it here at church, they're just not going to learn it. I mean, obviously, I agree. The home is the first place. And don't get me wrong. Where the home and what the home teaches, that's what they're supposed to learn. They're supposed to learn it from their mom and dad. And the church is supposed to reinforce it. That's why it's good when the mom and dad's teaching the same things at the church. And the church will never, our church at least, will not go against what the Bible teaches. And that's what we're going to instruct. And that's what we're going to teach. Tonight, what we're going to look at is something that I think most people would agree. If you've ever been a manager or been the boss over certain peoples or any number of people, you'll agree that something we need to teach the generation to come is about work ethic. Something we need to teach the generation to come is about work ethic. I told you a couple different times, most of you know my testimony, about when I was about 17, first got out of high school, I became the assistant manager of a restaurant. And when I turned 18, I became manager a few months after that. And I've had, when I was 18 all the way to about 21, until I went off to Bible college, which is what I should have done at 18. But when I went off to Bible college, I had the opportunity of hiring probably a couple different, maybe 100 people over those 3 years. I used to, after the restaurant, there was the, I actually went to the restaurants and then college, and then I went to work at the Christian bookstore, where is where I hired most of my people at. And you know what? There were some people out there, and I hired lots of young people because it was a seasonal job. There was a lot of young people out there that just did not know how to work. It was their first job, and they just didn't care about anything but getting a paycheck. The only thing they wanted to do was get paid, and they were more interested in how long their lunch break was supposed to be and how long their 15-minute breaks were. And once again, they were entitled to those things, but when it came time to work, they were looking and worried about what everyone else was doing instead of their job. Now, Miss Patty would probably tell you that's not just young people. I also, when I managed the Rite Aid pharmacies when I was in Bible college, there was a lot of older people that really didn't care about working. They cared about getting a paycheck. And I know some of you that have had responsibilities where you've had a number of people working underneath you, or that you were responsible for a lot of people to motivate them and get them to work. You know, it is a tough thing to do. And that's something we need to teach this generation to come, because not only is it impacting our future today, but I can only imagine how much this is going to impact the future and the future generations to come. Think about all those futures ahead. If people today believe that they're owed a living, believe that they're owed things, and that they should not have to work, and that they are entitled to things, what's it going to be like when I'm 70 or 80 years old? What's it going to be like when my grandkids are around, or my great-grandkids are around? You hear that, Christian Andrew? Grandkids and great-grandkids. Someday I want to have grandkids, okay? But not for a lot of years. they're like looking at me, what are you talking about? Christians just thinking about camp anyway. So this is something that's important to understand. We do need to teach this to our next generation. How do we do it? We teach it by training them by example. And we need to teach them not to hate the responsibilities that God's given them. And as a husband, as a father, gentlemen, what we need to train by example is we need to train them that, yes, we need to provide for our families, and we're going to look at that in a second, but we also need to embrace those roles as being the head of the house and the father. And it's not something that we begrudge doing, but something we train them that we're going to work at making our family work, we're going to work at providing for our family, we're going to work at being the spiritual head and spiritual leader. That there's nothing wrong with being a man, and there's nothing wrong about being the head of the house, there's nothing wrong with being in control as you follow after God and being the one that answers for that someday. And ladies, the same thing. We need to be willing, once again, it's a working together there. It's a helpmeet. It's their working together as a husband and wife. Remember, they become one. But ladies, you need to embrace the role as a keeper of the house that God's given you. Now, I know that some of you have to work outside the home, and I'm not judging you for that, but I'm saying your first priority, according to what the Bible says, is to be a keeper of the home. And you cannot do that begrudgingly. If you're going to teach the next generation to, it's important to work and have a good work ethic, you need to do what's important, the most important thing, first and above all else, and teach that to your children and teach that to the generation to come. Now, as we look at this and understand this, there's some important lessons I think that we can look at. And you say, Pastor, what are you getting at? What I'm getting at is I want to teach our young people. I want to teach our young men to have the moral fiber to get up out of bed and to provide for their families the way they're supposed to. And I want to teach our ladies to come, the young ladies to come, to have the moral fiber to get up out of bed when they're supposed to do the work that God's given them to do. And you say, isn't that taught? No, it might have been taught many years ago. But unless you're part of a good home, unless you got good Christian parents or good moral parents that are going to teach these things, it's just not something that's shown. You say, Pastor, this is just one of your hobby horses and you just want, no, it's biblical. And we're going to look at this, and we're going to look at this from the Bible, and hopefully this is going to encourage us to teach the next generation to come about a work ethic. You go back in the 1800s. Did you know back in the prisons, back in the 1800s, they taught them about work ethic? You know that over 80% of the people in prison had to work at a prison job to pay for their stay while they're in prison. Right. Yeah. You know, over the last 180 years, it's changed to where only 10% work at a prison job to help pay for any of the part that's provided for them. They started feeling bad. Hey, we shouldn't tell them what to do. We shouldn't make them work. You know, it's not like they can choose to be here. Well, they can choose by obeying the laws, but and there's something wrong with that. But that's the type of thinking that we have today. And I want you to look here in 2 Thessalonians chapter number 3. I want you to look at Paul here and his exhortation he gives to this church, and he talks to them about the importance of working. Now, here in 2 Thessalonians chapter number 3, verse number 8, it said, neither did we, let's start in verse number 7 to give you a little background. For yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we behave not ourselves disorderly among you. So he's giving them an example here of how they should behave themselves as an example here. Verse number 8, he says, neither do we eat any man's bread for naught. Now this word naught means for nothing. They're saying that they did not take of any man's bread for nothing, but wrought labor and travail night and day that we might not be chargeable to any of you. And what it's saying here in the Word of God is the Apostle Paul in their first missionary journey, when he was just beginning to meet these people, when he was planting this church, that they had offered him an offering. They had offered to take care of him in the first missionary journey, but he did not allow that during the first missionary journey. In the second missionary journey, in the third missionary journey, he did take offerings. He did let people take care of him so he could go a little bit farther in the Word. To help you understand here, there is nothing wrong with a pastor earning a living and also pastoring a church. But the problem with that is you don't have the opportunity or the time that most people would like to have invested in a pastor. As I mentioned before, you know, when I pastor a church, you help provide for my needs so I can be able to give myself fully to the work. And the same thing with Mr. Mark. But many of you I know minister and they do work at the church and they do things and they do it after they do their job. And I understand that. The Apostle Paul here is saying that he did not do this the first missionary journey, and there was a reason for it. He wanted to set an example for them. He wanted to teach them something. Verse number 9, not because we have not power. Now, what he's saying here, he had the right to claim an offering. It is something that he could have taken of them. There was not anything wrong with that, but he did not want anybody to rise up and say that the only reason why this man came, and the only reason why this man ministered, and the only reason why this man had anything to do with us is because we took care of him. Paul instead, it says he labored and travailed night and day. That way no one could say that about him. Not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an example unto you to follow us. So he says, I left this here as an example to follow. Verse number 10, I want you to see this. For even when we were with you, now young people, take a notice of this. This we commanded you. Now this was not a suggestion. This was something they were teaching. The command is not a suggestion. He's saying, when we were there, we were the ones in charge. This is a commandment that we had you follow. That if any would not work, neither should he eat. And this is a biblical principle here. If you want to work, if you want to eat, you should work. And he said, why would he say that? Well, look in verse number 11. Because there was people that was not interested in working. Verse number 11. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now, I think most of us know what a busybody is. They're really busy, but they're not busy about working. They're busy in other people's affairs. You ever work with somebody that likes to go from person to person to person instead of doing their work? I've seen people that do that, and that's what they're talking about here. There's people in this church and that did not want to work. They wanted to sponge off the church. They wanted others to take care of them, but they did not want to do anything. And they are making a real nuisance of themselves, and they were causing trouble in the church of Thessalonica. And that's why Paul said, look, I left you an example of how you're supposed to live. Now, when we talk about a work ethic, I want you to understand, I know there are certain people that are not capable of working. That's not who the message is aimed towards. This is a message that we're supposed to be reaching out to the next generation and teaching them a work ethic. So I want you to understand there are people that have disabilities. There are people that are unable to do certain work in certain jobs. So I don't want anybody to feel guilty upon that. I want us to understand that we need to teach people in the next generation what the Bible says about working and the different connections there is to it. And it's important that we show this and teach us. And I tell you that it involves a character trait there. I don't know about you, but when I used to work, we used to be around, and when there's managers around, they would say, that person's a good worker, or that person's not so great of a worker. And it's something we got to learn, and we want to teach that next generation what it is to be a good worker. I want you to take your Bibles now and go to 1 Timothy chapter number 5. 1 Timothy chapter number 5. You saw the biblical principle there that if you're not going to work, you shouldn't eat. Boy, you get hungry pretty quick if it goes that way. And if you're not going to work, you shouldn't eat. And here in 1 Timothy chapter number 5, in verse number 8, they are talking about the widows. They're talking about taking care of their families. They're talking about the widows in need and indeed. And also it's talking about widows. If you look at the end of verse number 5, it talks about continuing in supplications and prayers night and day. It's a godly person that's involved in the church. It's a godly person that is doing their best in serving the Lord. Now, they might not be able to do a work that they can take care of themselves, but instead they're doing things for the Lord. But here in verse number 8, this is another principle here. But if any provide not for his own, and especially of those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Now, here, this is once again, this is the Bible. These are harsh words. Pretty much some things you might say, hey, I don't really understand what that's saying in the Bible. This is pretty clear that if you as an individual was not willing to provide for your own, and especially for your own house, the Bible says you've denied the faith. Doesn't matter how much you can't stand up and give a testimony. Doesn't matter how many tracts you pass out. Doesn't matter. He says that you're denying the faith there. You need to go take care of your own. And he says, and if you do not do that, you're worse than an infidel. So here, biblical things about how we need to learn how to take care of and how people need to learn how to work and how we need to teach this next generation. They're not learning this at school, and they're not learning this at the TV. They're not learning this from our government. We need to teach our young people the importance of a work ethic. So there's some connections here I think we can make. Some connections and things I think that can help you. Remember, what goes on in the life of a child today does affect them what happens in an adult. And I love parents. I love how parents raise their children. But this is something they need to instill in their children. And they have a right to instill work ethic in their children. Young people, your parents should expect you to do work. You should not sit there and say, oh, why should I have to do that? You should take care of your own room. You should help take care of the things around the house. You should be learning. You should be training. And parents, you should be expecting this out of them. Now here, if you ever want your child to be able to be have a good work ethic later on, we need to expect it out as them as children. Believe me, most times, you did not get up one day when you turned 18 or 20 and said, "Hey, I'm going to go be a good worker." It doesn't work that way. It's something that you're trained and you look at over the years. There is a battle within you. There is a battle of being lazy and there's a battle of doing work. Something you face each and every day. Something you lay in your bed and say, am I going to get up and do something today or am I just going to sit around and not do anything? And it's a battle that you face. Let's look here about the connection between their work and their God. The connection between their work and God. Go ahead and take your Bible in Deuteronomy chapter number 8. Deuteronomy chapter number 8. Now these might be some principles that I've taught to the young people before. There's some new ones in there. I might even presented a couple of these things to the church before. But I think it's important that we re-instruct our young people the importance of having a good work ethic. Now here there is a connection. You say, Pastor, this has nothing to do with the Bible. This has nothing to do with God. You're just trying to get us to work harder. You're trying to get us to do more things. No, the Bible teaches us that working in the biblical principles here. In Deuteronomy chapter number 8, verse number 17. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse number 17. We see a connection here between their God and their work. Here it says in chapter 8, verse number 17. And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. And I don't know about you, but you ever met somebody who's proud of what they have? Now, I'm not talking about, thankful for what God gave them. But no, I'm talking about a person who's proud. You see the house I built with all my years of experience. You see all the things I have and all the work. And once again, you can be thankful for what God's allowed you to do. You can be thankful and grateful for what God's given you. And you can be proud in the sense that God has given you the opportunity to take care of the things He's blessed you with. But I'm talking about a person who's prideful because they think they've done it themselves. The type of person like Nebuchadnezzar that had to learn. He did not bring that kingdom to him. God did. And here in verse number 17, he says, and thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. Verse 18 says, but thou shalt remember the Lord thy God. He says, look, you're forgetting all about God when you speak like that. For it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. I underlined that in some of my Bibles there because it's important to understand. It is he, talking about God, that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. And it shall be, if thou do all forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, and I testify against you this day, that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyeth before your face, so shall ye perish, because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God. Now the nation is getting ready to go into the promised land, and he's saying, hey, look, don't forget how you got here. When you look around and you see these great fields, you see these great walls, you see these great cities, you see these great houses, don't forget who made you able to get this. You say, well, that's different. That's the children of Israel. No, God is the one that gives us the power to be able to get wealth. God is the one that gives us and makes us capable. You say, where do you see this? Well, we get our strength from God, don't we? We get our abilities from God. We get our time from God. God gives us what we need in order to make wealth. God gives us what we need in order to provide. God gives us the opportunity and the ability and creates the opportunities for us to be able to provide what we need. God gave you a precious gift, and God has made you able to do certain things. Now, some of you have certain talents and certain abilities. Other people have other talents and other abilities. But God has made you and enabled you to be able to accomplish the task He's put in front of you. Now, I want you to understand, there is a connection here between your work and your God. God is the one that has made you able to do it. You know, I really like to meet people who talk about and who talk like this. People who say, hey, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for God. I wouldn't have this if it wasn't for God. I wouldn't have the house, or I wouldn't have the job, or I wouldn't have the opportunity, or I wouldn't have this ability. I wouldn't have this talent unless it came from God. You know what that does? That shows a person who is grateful for what they have. That shows a person who is thankful for what they have. And that shows a person, when they have a need, where are they going to go? Are they going to turn to themselves? No, they're going to turn to God. And we need to teach this to our young people. We need to teach our young people, hey, God has made you a certain age, a certain gender, and a certain abilities, and a certain strength, not for you just to learn how to become the best guy or the best girl at Mario Kart. He's given you these the opportunities to be able to use that talent you've been given, that strength you've been given, to bear the yoke or in your youth, to do your work and to do things. Now, young people are supposed to enjoy themselves. They're supposed to be children, and they're supposed to have a good time. I understand that, and I agree that. But you know what? There's a lot of people that just have not grown up today. And there's a lot of people out there that just do not want to work because they've never been taught this as a child or as a teenager. We need to understand there is a connection between their God and their work. God is who also is the one who gives us the time to accomplish the work. We must learn to look at time as a valuable asset and do the time, have the time, and take care of it when we have the opportunity. Now, young people, there are things you can do today to be a blessing to your parents that you'll never have the opportunity ever to do again. Now, I know you're saying, well, I can come back empty the trash, or I can come fold clothes, or I can come cut the grass. As you get older and get your own responsibilities, get your own families, you're not going to have that much time probably unless there's a necessity there. Use the opportunity and privileges that you have now. Parents, same thing. Take advantage of the opportunities that you have now. And the problems that we have today is no one wants to teach. No one wants to take the time to train our young people how important it is to work. Now, I'm not talking about having to pay young people. I'm talking about just coming alongside and encouraging them to work and do what's good. It doesn't always have to be about fun. It doesn't always need a reward. There is a reward in teaching and training them to help because that's what they need to do. Second thing is there's a connection between our work and our character. There's a connection between our work and our character. Now, what does the word character mean? It means it's a peculiar qualities impressed by a nature or habit on a person which has distinguished him from others. That means what's different about them. There is work has connection with your character. The type of worker you are will develop a certain type of character. I don't know about you, but when I used to have and see these young people that come across the scene or some of these older people that came across, there are people out there who had the character of being a hard worker. There's people out there who had a character of not being a hard worker. There is a connection there. I want you to take your Bible here and look in Proverbs chapter 24. Proverbs chapter 24. Now, I also want to remind you this, especially you young people, is that inside every man and every woman is a desire to accomplish great things. Inside every man, there is a desire to lie around and do nothing. Now, there's two different things at war against you. There's the one side of you that wants to get up and wants to do something and wants to feel needed and wants to feel like they've accomplished something and wants to feel like they've done something that was worthwhile. There is something inside of you that has that God-given desire. But also inside of you, there is something that wants you to be lazy. There's something that does not want to do anything all day long. Every day, both the desires will draw you. The desire that dominates you will determine what type of character you have when it comes to your work ethic. The type of desire you let dominate you is the one that will determine what type of character you have. Here in Proverbs chapter 24, in verses 30 through 34, you read about a man that's a slothful man. Now, what does it mean to be slothful? It means to be lazy, to be sluggish, to be inactive, meaning that you have an opportunity in your hands and you let it slide right through you because you don't do it. Here in Proverbs chapter 24, verses 30 through 34, the word of God says, I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Now, he had a field, and he had a vineyard. He had an opportunity. He let it go right through his hands. Then I saw and considered it well, and I looked upon it and received instruction, yet a little sleep and a little slumber, a little folding of hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. Also in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 19, the Bible says, the way of the slothful man is a hedge of thorns, but the way of the righteous is made plain. See, you can connect your work ethic with your character. And I think we have a lot of wonderful characters, people. You know, we have a lot of wonderful characters at our church, that's for sure. But we have a lot of wonderful people who have good character when it comes to a work ethic. I see lots of people out working hard, doing the best they can. And I am encouraged by that. And I know some are retired. And when you get retired, it doesn't mean that you retire from everything. You still got God's work that you can be doing. You still have things that you can be doing. And you still have opportunities that you can explore here. But I want you to understand, young people, that this desire to be lazy and not do anything is not something that is only common to you. Your parents probably wouldn't mind sitting around not doing anything. But in all reality, you had to fight against that temptation. You had to fight against that to not be a slothful person. And the Bible talks often about the sloth man versus the diligent. I have a little story here that a man wrote. It was in the Bob Schultz book that I got from Brother Young's table. He had called this story about himself as Mr. Industry versus Mr. Sloth. And it's a little bit of a long story, but I think you'll get the point. I think it proves a good point here too. My garden is a group of raised beds separated by small walkways. Every 2 years, I add a fresh layer of wood chips to the walks to keep my boots out of the mud. My 2 years had expired, and a mound of chips waited patiently just off the driveway. I needed someone to move them from the pile to the pass. At times, I am industrious, working like a beaver, finishing project after project, and other times, I am slothful, postponing my work. Even when I'm feeling industrious, my mind is frequently interrupted by slothful thoughts. I have come to attach names to the thoughts in my mind that encourage me to work. I call the one thoughts Mr. Industry. The thoughts that encourage me to do little or nothing, I call Mr. Sloth. A few days ago, I've been enjoying Mr. Sloth's advice. It was raining outside. I sat in the house. During the time I should have been spreading chips, I comfortably read a book. The prodding of Mr. Industry would not let me enjoy the story. He often disturbs me when I'm listening to Mr. Sloth. Today was no exception. Industry paced back and forth, making statements like, "Put out the chips and read your book later. Following Mr. Sloth will bring you to poverty. Don't worry about getting wet. You've worked in the rain before and it didn't hurt you. Get out and work." He made me feel guilty, but I still didn't do the work. Leaving the book by my warm chair, I stepped out onto the porch. Through a break in the clouds, the sun seemed to be shouting something to Mr. Industry, which challenged me, at least spread one wheelbarrow of chips before dinner. Mr. Sloth didn't like the idea. But consider the prospect. He wasn't opposed to occasional attacks. He boosted his opinion of himself. I did one wheelbarrow and that was enough. He could say with pride to anyone who might accuse him of laziness. So I listened to Mr. Industry, grabbing the pitchfork, threw it into the barrel and headed for the pile. Mr. Sloth did not like the spring in my step. He complained, "Hey, not so fast. Watch out for your back. You're too old to this. Why don't you just hire a neighborhood kid?" Mr. Industry responded, "A little exercise will loosen those back muscles. You're starting to feel good. Look, the wheelbarrow is already full." The first load did not cover very much area. Mr. Sloth used that fact to urge me back to my study. "The job is too big," he complained. Besides, our agreement was just one load. Standing still, I slowly filled my lungs with as much fresh air as they could hold. Mr. Industry insisted, "We just got to have one other load." I grabbed the handles and headed back to the pile. Mr. Sloth, who had been lying on the bed ground beside the wheelbarrow, reached up, grabbing the edge of one hand, and he hung as I dragged him along. I filled, pushed, dumped, and spread. My whole body had accepted Mr. Industry's advice and enjoyed it. Occasionally, some limb or muscle complained of overexertion, but I kept going, load after load, in spite of Mr. Sloth's low whines. When the final wheelbarrow load covered the last corner, I could hardly believe it. I never thought I could get the job done so quickly. Mr. Industry let out a victorious cheer. He jumped and hollered as if he had just won the Boston Marathon. I looked around for Mr. Sloth, and for the first time all day, I couldn't see him anywhere. From the dining room window, my wife announced, "Dinner!" I put away my tools and with a light step entered the house. All evening, Mr. Industry hung pictures of garden victory in my mind. We rejoice as much as a winner could, and a task accomplished is sweet to the soul. Now, we don't have a lot of time to help you understand all this, but I want you to get that he was happy after he got the job done. After the work was done, after work's accomplished, that you feel good about what you've done because you've accomplished something. You know, I've noticed that the person who complains a lot at work is usually the one that doesn't do very much. You notice the person that's usually the happiest and smiling is the one that's continually working, accomplishing tasks. Young people, working hard is something that you'll enjoy your work and you'll enjoy your labor. That's even found in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter number 5, but we don't have time to go there this evening. The third thing I want you to see about is you make the connection not only between your work and your God, your work and your testimony, but you make the connection between your work and your testimony. The other one was not your work and testimony. The other one there, make a connection between your work and your testimony. Now, you say that's the same thing as your character. No, your character is the qualities that you have. Your testimony is what other people think you are. Now, the Bible even says, servants, be obedient to them that your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. Say, what does that have to do with anything? That means that when you're working, when you're doing something, you don't work as if you're working for your boss, Bob, or the owner named Nancy. You're working for the Lord. You're working as if you're doing it as unto Christ. So a Christian there should be the best workers. Not because they're getting paid the most, but because their work is unto the Lord. Now, does that mean they're going to be the most talented? Does that mean they're going to accomplish the most? It does not always mean that. But it does mean that they're the most work. They're the best workers. Matthew 5:16 says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. That means living a good life. And that's what it means, yes. When you're a good worker, you will have character, but you will have the testimony to be able to talk to others. Now, who's going to be able to go talk to their boss when you're lazy, when you're late, you don't show up, you call out all the time? I mean, how much of an influence are you going to have in him when you say, hey, can you come to this important day at church? It would be important to me. It would be a wonderful, valuable thing to me if you would come with me. And he might say, hey, look, you don't care about your work. Why in the world would I want to care about something you care about? You know, Christians, we need to learn that our testimony is important. That we serve and we got, when it says Christian, you know what that means? It means our name is attached with Christ. And when we walk around and say, hey, I need Sunday off for church, which we should try to do our best to have Sundays off for church, we also need to make sure that we're working as hard as we can the rest of the days to have a good testimony. Now, I think you would agree, it's a terrible thing when a pastor does something wrong and he has to leave a ministry. But I think it's also a terrible thing when other people do wrong, not just the pastor, we're all Christians, and you have to leave your work because of the fact that you haven't done the best you could. We need to teach the generation to come to have a good work ethic. One, because there's a connection with God, and there's a connection with their character, but there's a connection with their testimony. Everything you do is connected with your testimony. If you've done something wrong, admit it. Fix it. But remember, you have a testimony. I remember when I first got my first job. Actually, it was my second job. First job I got was Burger King. I stayed there for 2 whole weeks. I think I've told you, it's 2 weeks. That doesn't sound long. Well, they tried to make me work Sundays. They liked me, and they even gave me a raise within my first 2 weeks. I thought I was doing great. I started off minimum wage, worked the first week. The guy brought me in and says, we want to give you a raise. You're doing a good job. And I said, oh, that's great. This is easy. I'm going to be rich by the time I, you know, in 10 years, I'm going to be able to buy my own house and get a raise every week. Well, I found out why. It's because they tried to make me work Sunday. And I said to him, look, you did oversight. I'll work once, but I won't do it again just because I wanted to be a valuable employee. Well, next week, they said, okay, we won't do it next week. You know what they did? They tried to make me work Sundays again. So I had to leave that job. Then I had to go to my dad and say, hey, Dad, can you help me find a job? And my dad helped me find a job, and that was at a Golden Corral where I was a dishwasher. At the age of 14, a dishwasher. And you know what? I worked with live-in workouts. You know what a live-in workout is? They lived in the prison, they work outside the prison. And so that they were all the dishwashers and me. I mean, there was guys that were huge. This one guy's name was Scrap. That was his nickname. He is Scrap, and that's what I was supposed to call him. I called him Mr. Scrap. He was about 6'3", and he was huge. And he had all these tattoos, and these are the guys I worked with. But you know what? They wouldn't mess with me because they knew my dad was a police officer. So I was back there, and I was by the age of 15, I was in charge of the dish room, and I was telling those guys what to do. And that was just because of the fact that, I don't know why, they wanted to keep me back in the dish room. They gave me a title to make me feel special. But I was a good worker. But you know, when I got that job, you know what my dad told me? He says, look, son, I got you this job. I helped you get this job. The lady who owned the restaurant knows me. They're doing me a favor by letting you work there. He says, you better not mess up. He says, you got to remember something. You're my son, and my name goes with you. You better not be late. You better work hard while you're there, and no matter what they ask you to do, you better do it right. And you know what? My dad taught me to have a good work ethic, and my dad showed me the importance of a good work ethic. And there is not anything special about me, and the Lord gave me opportunities, not because I was the brightest or the fastest or the best of those years, but it's because of the fact that my dad had instilled in me a good work ethic back then. You know, I know at the age of 9 and 10 and 11 in those years, I you know, I did paper routes and then, you know, cut grass and things like that. And I know not all young people have those opportunities, but there's a lot of opportunities around the house and around the way to minister and work hard. And we don't discourage your young people from doing it. Encourage them, but encourage them when they're working to do things, remembering that you're doing with God's name invested with you. Two more quick things and we'll stop. Two more quick things, and these are a little bit different. The first was connection of your connection with your work with God, and your connection with your work and your character, your connection with your work and your testimony. Two last things. These are more dangerous things that I want you to look at, and I want the young people to understand and you to understand the connection between rest and work. Connection between rest and work. The Bible says in Ephesians 4:28, "Let him that steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the things which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth." There can be no rest without work. Someone had to provide the things, that you stay under. We need to teach that to our young people. And I'm not talking about every time you go and you put a place of food, put food right down there, and you say, "Now, your dad worked hard, you better appreciate." I'm not saying beat him over the head with it, but the young people need to understand things just do not grow on trees. You ever thought that your young person wanted money so much that you thought that they grow on trees? Your dad ever say, "Hey, money doesn't grow on trees"? Now, I don't know, but we need to teach young people the connection there. Maybe our parents before us did that so much that we don't teach that to our kids today. So I think it's important we realize that we teach them that rest and work goes hand in hand. Think about it. Think about our forefathers. Many of our forefathers were rich men. And think about George Washington. He did not have to work each day to provide for his food and his shelter. He was a fairly wealthy man. He could have enjoyed living on Mount Vernon, reaping the benefits of his previous work. However, Washington wanted to help provide rest for all the Americans by working to create a free nation. For this, it meant for him years of wars and years of politics. I don't know which would be worse, the wars or the politics to be involved in. But he was refusing to rest. He worked and he worked. And you know what? We still receive the benefits of rest today from Washington's labors. And we need to teach our young people that the clothes that they wear and the comforters that they sleep under and the houses that are provided for them, someone had to pay a price. Someone has to do work to make those things happen. I'm not trying to talk about making them feel guilty, but help them understand. So that way, when they get 18 years old and they see their mom and dad has a three-bedroom house with a two-car garage and they drive a fairly nice car, they don't turn around and say, "Hey, I'm ready for my big house, I'm ready for my cars," when the parents have worked and they scrimped and they saved and they worked hard and they worked long hours. Help them understand and appreciate the things that they've received. Now, there's nothing wrong with giving in gifts. There's nothing wrong with treating them well. Nothing wrong with even spoiling with them to an extent, as long as they understand that these are good gifts that God has been able to for you to provide them. So many young people think they are entitled to things, that they're always looking for the next best and biggest thing, and they get themselves in financial problems and credit history problems because of the fact that they're always not understanding that they have to work first before they rest. Think about God. He created the world in 6 days, and what did he do after that? He rested. And young people, there's nothing wrong with resting. We should rest after the day of work. And we need to be careful. Once again, there's a battle there going on. There are a side of us that wants to be lazy, and there's a side of us that wants to work and accomplish things. Next thing I want you to understand, they kind of go hand in hand, is connection with responsibility and privilege. The connection between responsibility and privilege. Kids today think that they should be privileged and get all the other things without the responsibility that goes along with it. They think they should be able to do this, this, and this, and not have to have the responsibility that goes hand in hand. Now, we just need to teach them. There's responsibility that goes along with these privileges. When you got a house, you live in a house. If you sit there and you don't do anything to fix up your house in 20, 30, 40 years, guess what? That house isn't going to be worth living in anymore. There's a responsibility to that privilege you have. And the opportunities that you have and you need to instill into our children, something we teach our youth, that is, if there is a privilege of coming to a teen activity, you know what? You got a responsibility. You need to follow certain guidelines, follow certain rules. When it's time to clean up, you need to get up and clean up. Now, does that mean it's always best? It might be easier and quicker if Mr. Mark and Miss Julia did it themselves instead of having to teach the kids how to do it. But we need to teach them responsibility that comes with the privilege. Same thing with at your house. You know, you can't just give everything to your kids and you just say, here, 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 and never teach them the responsibility that goes along with it. It's hand in hand. You say, Pastor, that just doesn't happen at my house. We need to teach our kids this. It is scriptural things here. In the book of Lamentations, it says, it is good for a man to that he bear the yoke in his youth. In Lamentations 3:27-28, it says, it is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. That means when they're young, that they, now I'm not talking about child labor laws and slaves and things like that. I'm not. I'm talking that a young person at his age and their ability they have, they should be working. If your young person's old enough to pick up something, they should clean up their own room. They should make their own beds. They should do the things that they can to take care of their own things they have. If they got the benefit of having their own bed or their own room, they should have the responsibility of taking care of it. And I think that's important we show that to young people. Why is that important now? Because when they get more things, they got to understand there's a responsibility that comes with it. There is another verse right at the end of Lamentations 3:27. The next verse is, he sitteth alone and keepeth silence because he hath borne it upon him. And I find that verse kind of interesting. He sitteth alone and keepeth silence because he hath borne it upon him. Now I'm going to close with this thought. You know, how many young people do you know today that can sit and stay quiet? Just sit alone and stay quiet. You know what? That doesn't happen very much anymore. You know, they're always looking for the next big and best thing. Okay, that was fun. What's next? Okay, that was great. What's the next best thing? Well, that roller coaster was good. Let's go find a bigger one. You know, we don't have young people anymore that sit and meditate and look at the stars just because they're part of God's creation. How do we get there? You know what? If you can teach your young person to work and appreciate the things they've done, they're going to appreciate the job and appreciate the things that are around them a lot better. If they're having to pay for some of their own things and their own pleasures, they're going to start valuing them a little bit more and say, hey, you know what? I should learn to appreciate the things I have. It's the connection of the responsibility with the privileges they have. And we could spend hours talking about this, but I hope you got the points and the understanding there. We need to teach the next generation. You say, okay, this was a message to parents. I don't have kids in my house anymore. Then I don't have to worry about the message. No, no, there's a lot of older people in here today that can help teach our young people something. Let's think about it this way. We got a beautiful church here, don't we? I think it does. I think it's great. I tell people all the time when they talk about how great the church is, when we come and show the church off to people, you know, if it's somebody or pastors, I say, I was not here at all when they built any of this. I was blessed to come in here and it was already been built. I didn't go through any building projects. I know many of you did. I wasn't here. When I got here, the new building was even back there. I said, but these are privileges. To sit in that auditorium that is air-conditioned, padded pews, a fellowship hall, you know, that's a privilege. So you want everybody to come to church. Yes, we want everybody to come to church. But there's a responsibility that goes along with it. There is some work that needs to be done with it. There is grass that needs to be cut. There is carpets that need to be cleaned. There is giving that needs to be done to be able to keep the building. There's a responsibility and a privilege that goes hand in hand. And we need to understand, I'm not saying that you have to work every single time you walk in the door. But we can teach this next generation. This is your church. You love it. I'm going to do something here to help keep things the way they're supposed to be. Because somebody has to do it. And if we treated our church like we treat our house, I wonder if it might look a little bit better. But if we treated our church the way we treat our house, the way we treat our church, I wonder how our house would look like. I think that there would be lacking in some areas. And so I want to encourage you. We can teach our kids some principles by just living a testimony and living a godly life. But there is connections there. There is connection between God and your work. God gives you the ability to work. God gives you the opportunity. What you take advantage of those opportunities are important. Same thing for young people. He's given them the strength and talent to do certain things. They're not going to be able to do great, mighty things. They're not going to be able to pull the car across the parking lot, but they might be able to learn how to wash a car. They might not be able to fix a transmission, but they might be able to learn how to vacuum out a car. You know, things like that that you can give your young person, it's nothing wrong with teaching them the work, teaching them principles to help them along. And there's also a connection that comes with their character and their work. There's a connection with their testimony and their work. And there is something there we need to teach them when it comes to privileges versus responsibility. And there is something there that we need to teach them when it comes to privileges and responsibility too. Let's go ahead and look to the Lord in word of prayer. Heads bowed and eyes closed. Let's go ahead and raise to our feet.